Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. It's a wonderful, wonderful afternoon, beautiful, beautiful afternoon, and I'm just grateful to be here to have another awesome, awesome show planned for you today. This show is for entrepreneurs. So I'd like to welcome all of you entrepreneurs, everybody that's an entrepreneur, has an interest in business, thinking about starting a business, or maybe you've already started a business and you just want to learn more. Well, you've come to the right show. My special guest today is somebody who's a regular on Health, Wealth, and Divine. We're very, very fortunate to have him take time out of his schedule to bless us with his wisdom, his knowledge, his years, over 50 years of experience as an entrepreneur. And I guarantee you, by the end of this show, you're going to be glad that you tuned in. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. If you're just tuning in for the first time and you don't know who my guest is, my special guest today is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. And like I mentioned, he's got over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. He grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he has started 10, that's right, I said 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. After his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, located in Richmond, Virginia. He's also an author. He's written a fabulous book. It's titled Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top 102 Business Principles. He's got another book that he's just completed that we're going to tell you all about. And so it is my pleasure to bring to you today Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Awesome, awesome author. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure. Again, as I mentioned to the listeners, you have over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. That's a long time to be doing it. That's a half a century. And during that time, you've actually compiled a lot of principles to help entrepreneurs in their quest to be successful as entrepreneurs. We know that most small businesses fail within the first year. There's a reason for that. And you've written a book that is just packed full of tips and stories and examples and just how people can actually what to do, what not to do. And, you know, again, it's a pleasure, and I just want everybody to know we're actually going through the book, and I want you to know we'll tell you how you can get this great book during the course of the show. That way you can follow along with us, and you don't have to wait until each show to get the next principle. You can actually read ahead, and then when we come back, you're kind of up to speed, and then you can it's easier to follow. But, again, we're going through the book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. And this week, we're going to be talking about a very, very important aspect of business. All of the principles in here are very, very important. But I think that people who are going into business, just starting a business, probably don't pay a lot of attention to this aspect of business until it's too late. We're on Chapter 6, and Chapter 6 is titled Legal and Ethical Issues. And it's starting off with principle number 42. And principle 42 states that there are legal, business issues, and ethical issues. Again, there are legal issues, business issues, and ethical issues. Keep them separate. you sounds like you're speaking from experience here, Professor Geiger. I mean, there's a lot of nuggets waiting to be told. So everybody get ready. And I just want you to know that if you have a question or a comment and you'd like to join the conversation, and you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1. If you're listening online, the number is 347-324-5727. Again, my special guest today is Professor Joseph Geiger. And, again, there are legal issues, business issues, and ethical issues. Why should we keep them separate, Professor?
Well, you should just not do them at the same place. So I've had people say, well, does that mean because I'm an owner, I can't get involved with business or with religious and ethical issues, and the answer is, of course you can. You just can't do it business circumstance. So you can do all three of these. You just don't mix them together. The ethical issue is really kind of a state of mind, and I think in a nutshell, if you want to be run an ethical business, people say, well, that's great. Of course we do. Precisely, how do you do it? And it's really very simple. You just take the long view. So let's say that you're working for Home Depot, and somebody comes in, and some lady comes in, and she says, "I just been sent down here to get a DeWalt drill and screwdriver, and they cost about $160." So the first question I would have is, ma'am, how are you going to use it? And she might say, well, we're just moving into a house here, and we have a whole bunch of pictures to put up. So rather than take her to a $160, $180 DeWalt drill, I would take her to a skill that costs $29 and say, look, if that's what you're going to use it for, it's just an occasional use. Don't spend $180 or $200 on a commercial quality drill that is designed to be used 8 hours a day and dropped off a two-story building and not hurt it. Why don't you just get this $29 drill and it'll do a fine job for you. And it's not up to the quality standards of a DeWalt, but nevertheless, it's kind of like buying a car. You don't need to buy a commercial bus that's designed to run 500,000 miles between overhauls because you're not going to do that. You're going to run it 50,000 miles or so. So take the long view. What's good for the customer? And if you can keep your customers happy so that when they go home, they'll say, this guy could have sold me a $200 drill, but rather than that, he showed me how I can get my job done for $29. You made a friend for life. And so that's the way you do it. Keep religious issues out of the business issue. If somebody wants to talk to you about religion in a business setting, just dodge it. Don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-win deal. You can't come out ahead. All you can do is lose. So just don't do it. So keep your business issues, ethical issues, and religious issues separate, and you'll be well served.
Well, you know, Professor, speaking of the ethical issues, in the example that you gave concerning the person working at the hardware store, and the lady comes in and she wants a particular, wants to buy a particular product, and, let's just assume that the guy is on salary. You know, he's a paid employee. Whether he takes her advice and gets the drill that he recommends or whether she, doesn't and gets another drill, one that he thinks that she doesn't even need, he's still going to get his salary, whatever his hourly rate, wage is. But now you take somebody in a different example who is paid by commission. Now, this person's got to eat, okay? Now, and I understand that, what you were saying as far as the ethics go, but doesn't it get tricky in business when you have people who are paid by commission and they're not going to get paid regardless, but their whole livelihood is dependent upon whether or not you get a particular product? And in many cases, if they had a bad month last month on commission, they may want to sell you that higher price drill, say, for example, just to make up for the lack of money that they made last month.
Well, that's true. But here again, take the long view. If you you send her home with your card and you've shown her how for her use she can do it at 20% the cost and ask her to send her friends to you, you'll come out ahead. Just if you always take the long view, you'll do a lot better for your business. One of the reasons that business has a bad name for some people is they say, well, they're money grubbers. they're always trying to sell you way more than you want or need or ought to have. Now, maybe the lady, there is a reason that she wants a DeWalt drill, because her husband is a carpenter and he uses it all the time. Fine. But find out first. Very often what happens is some workman she'll say, well, you know, what do I need? Because I don't know. And he's a full-time workman. He uses those tools all the time. So he tells her about the expensive tool that is blooming bulletproof. Well, that's not her need. So send her home with a smile on her face, how she saved money. And you know, you could have sold her the more expensive one, and of course you probably would have made more than $29 in commission. But if you take the long view, it will help you in the long run. And I'm a real believer in that. And
I
particularly if you're the business owner, that's where it really helps, that you ought to train your people to do the same.
Yeah, because I think word spreads. Word does get around. People start referring you to other people, and the lady, like you gave the example, like you said, she could go back and say, you know, he could have sold me this, but he didn't, you know. And they share these stories with other people, and before you know it,
right,
the reputation of a person that's above board and, you know, looking out for the customer, that gets around, and before you know it, you got more business than you can handle.
I think so. I think that's the way to do it.
Well, let's move on to principle number 43. This is a very, very important one, one that cannot be overstated. Everybody, you really need to pay attention. This principle is something that can save you a lot of headache, a lot of heartache, so please pay attention. Number 43, of all legal company structures, the general partnership is the worst. I'll repeat that. Of all legal company structures, the general partnership is the worst. That's a strong statement, Professor. That's a strong statement.
Is.
I know you can.
It is, and the reason is really simple. You'll hear people say, and even some attorneys will say, that go ahead and have a partnership. It's easy to put together and so on. Well, that's basically not true. Today, I just formed a new corporation to sell my book, or my books now, and some other things that I sell. And they and it cost me, let's see, it cost $39 for the corporation. It cost, and then I spent another $100 to get a bunch of paperwork so I wouldn't have to fill that out. Now, I'm perfectly capable of doing it because I've done this before. If you've never done it before, you're not perfectly capable of doing it. But what I got is all the stuff that I needed for the bank statements, so I can open a bank account by just taking it to the bank. And you fill in two things and sign your name. You date it and fill in two things and sign your name, and away you go. And there's a bunch of other little stuff like that. The whole thing cost me $140. And it's a LLC. So if I want to bring somebody else in, I can do that. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. If I had a partner and we want to be 50-50 partners, they can come in and they can, you know, then it's just a question of issuing stock. And let's say I'll issue myself 100 shares and issue them 100 shares, and now we're 50-50 partners. The problem with a corporation is that with a corporation, you are individually and severally on the hook for any and all actions of either or all the partners. So if there's two of you, then you're on the hook for everything the other guy does, and he's on the hook for everything you do. Now, if he robs a bank, you can't go to prison for him. But let's say there's three or four of you, and I'm one of them, and we just have a really, really big sale, and we get we get $500,000 that flows into our bank account. So we're all on the bank account. We're all equal partners. So I scoop the $500,000, and I go to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil and live the good life. And guess what happens to the rest of you? You're on the hook for it. So you're personally liable to pay all the debts of the business. Well, I took all the money, so you're going to have to pay it. I'm in Rio or some other place. Nobody knows where I'm at, and I'm having a grand old time. And you guys are all on the hook. And they aren't going to go after me because I'm hard to find. And if they do find me, then how the heck are they going to get me back from Rio? It's not easy. You're easy because you're right here. And so they can go after you. And so that is the reason that a general partnership is absolute death and destruction. Now, there are some other kinds of partnerships that are different. And the word general should be underlined, where everybody is an equal partner. There's limited liability partnerships. There are some other kinds of partnerships, but the general partnership is the most common. And I just, as a general rule, except for very unusual circumstances, if the word partnership is in it, don't join it. And there'll be people who say, well, it's easier to form. That's not true. It is more difficult to form. Because a general partnership, if Juanza, you and I are a partnership, then when you draw up the partnership papers, the attorney has to say, what are your jobs and what are my jobs? What are our titles? What do we do? How much do we put in and all that? With an LLC or a corporation, you don't have to do any of that stuff. Because when you get an LLC, you form it, and the number of shares in the case of a corporation, or the number of memberships in the case of an LLC, it's two names for the same thing, by the way. Don't let that put you off. They have two names, but they both mean the same thing. Then the number of shares or memberships dictate what your ownership is. And if you want to sell your shares or memberships, you can. You can sell them to whoever you darn well please. Now, embedded in the partnership or in the LLC agreement, it might say that because we're close held, you have to offer them to the other members, or if you're a corporation, the other shareholders, but that's just written in there. It may be in, may not be in. You need to find out. And normally you offer it to the other members, the other partners, or the other, not partners, I don't want to use that word, the other people involved in the ownership of the corporation or LLC. Maybe you need to offer it to them for a little while, and if nobody says go, well, then you can sell it off to whoever you want to, and so on. So just if the word partnership is in the company structure, I would strongly recommend you just don't do it. Some are okay, but we're getting down into the weeds, and if this is your first shot at it, just stay away from it. And today, the LLC is what most people want to go into. There's some technical reasons that one may be better than another, but for a closely held, the LLC is probably the best of them.
You know, one of the things that I found interesting in reading your book, Professor, you talked about, even back to the general partnership for a moment, you talked about how even in the case if, let's say you have five partners or even three, however many you have, and one gets divorced, then even that personal act in this individual's personal life has the potential to affect everybody else in the business, correct?
Oh, sure. Of course it does, because what's going to happen is the spouse who is leaving is going to say, I want half of the assets of our marriage, And part of the assets are the shares or the percentage in the partnership, and so I want half of those assets. That affects the people who are in it. They didn't have anything to do with this darn divorce, but here we go, and now they're deeply involved in it. And maybe he or she who is leaving says, I not only want half, what I'm going to do is give them to my alcoholic drunk son, and he's going to be right in the middle of this thing, and he wants to run the sales department. Oh goodness, now what do? Now we got a really big. There is just no end to the problems. So like I say, if the company structure says partnership, any kind of form of partnership, don't do it. Again, some of them are okay. And there are some that have historically worked out very well. But that's a technical thing, and for the purpose of a starting person who has never done it before, just stay away from it.
And that would include a couple, even if a couple, if it, let's say a married couple or two people, they're planning on getting married, say, and they say, okay, well, we're going to form this partnership, you know, since we're going to get married anyway, or whatever, you know what I mean, we're going to be together anyway. So that would apply to all and
absolutely.
Every.
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, there is no circumstance that a business general partnership makes sense. I don't care who it is. Whether it's your son or daughter or wife or spouse or husband, I just doesn't make any difference. The answer is no. You can do it better with an LLC. If that's what you want to do, well, then form an LLC, and each of you take equal number of shares, and away you go. And then if anything ever happens, it's easy to break it up, and it doesn't absolutely terminate the business. But if you're in a partnership, if one of the partners just dies from purely natural causes, your partnership's over with, because a partnership is a group of specific people who are doing a specific job, and if one of them dies, you're over with. It's done. You got to reform the thing. If you want to bring somebody else in, you can't do that, because now you are no longer dealing with the original people. So, I could wax on this, talk to you for an hour on it, and give you just more and more reasons not to. But the short story is, if the documents say this is a blank something partnership, the answer is no, not going to do that. If you want me in then it needs to be an LLC, a C corp, an S corp, but not a partnership.
I want everybody to know they're listening to somebody with over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. Over 50 years experience. So when you are dealing in business and you want information, you want to make sure that the information that you're getting is from somebody that knows what they're talking about. You know, not just you had an uncle who knew somebody's nephew that had a daughter that was in business, and they said, no, you want to get your information from somebody that's been in business, that's done it. I mean, for heaven's sake, we're talking about an author here who's written a book called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. So you want to make sure that when you're listening to somebody, you're listening to somebody that knows and not just going on hearsay. So many people have failed and made bad decisions because they just did not get the right information. Speaking of author, now would be a good time to even just to talk about a new project that you're working on, Professor. Actually just completed another book. Could you tell our listening audience about that?
Yeah, this doesn't have a whole lot to do with being an entrepreneur. This book, it's entitled Finding a Career for Life, and it's written for juniors and seniors in high school, freshmen, sophomore, and college to help them make better decisions. And the reason I wrote it is because in the classes that I teach, I've had just all kinds of young people come in, and some not so young, who got a degree, and then they got out there and they found out there really weren't any jobs for that degree. And so I started kind of nosing around and trying to find out or learn something about it. And one of the things I learned was that CNN Money Report, the magazine, had done a survey here in 2011 and 2012. And what they found out was that 6 months after graduation, that 41% of graduates, college graduates, were working at jobs that did not require any kind of a degree. In other words, they were flipping hamburgers. And another 11% were just plain unemployed because they couldn't find anything. So, you know, why is that? And the more I looked around, the more I found that what is happening is that the media, politicians, and academia is telling people, young folks, that you have to have a degree, any kind of a degree, and if you get any kind of a degree, you will get a good job. If you don't get a degree, you won't get a good job. Well, that's just patently not true. For example, you don't have to have any kind of a degree to be an airline pilot. You have to have certain skills. I got a pilot's license. Had nothing to do with the degree in college that I got. I got it from a flying school, and I got all kinds of attachments to it. So I'm a private commercial instrument certified for water wings and jets. Well, I say water wings, that's what we called it, amphibian. And okay. And so I've got 9,000 hours. So if I wasn't so darn old, I would be a real good candidate as an airline pilot today, and you can expect income from $75,000 up, way up, like $250,000. And so it's a high paying job, does not require any kind of a degree. I found a website that one of the things they listed were the 20 most secure and the 20 least secure jobs. And of the 20 most secure jobs, I think it was 5 or 6 of them did not require a college education. Now, many of them did, but those did not. So if you get a job or if you go to college and somebody talks you into or you talk yourself into getting a bachelor's or even a master's degree in psychology, that's wonderful. And if that's your passion, go for it. However, you should understand that that is the worst from a job standpoint that you can get. It is terrible. There are no jobs for a bachelor's or a master's. If you get a PhD, that's different. But a bachelor's and master's, you're out of luck. And the cost of getting that bachelor's and master's in psychology is almost exactly the same as getting a degree in petroleum engineering. The average petroleum engineer by mid-career is making essentially $170,000. And the average psychology is making less than $30,000. Costs the same. Food for your family costs the same. Rent costs the same. Paying off your debt probably is going to be the same. But one's making 5 times as much as the other. So the problem is that a lot of people don't know that. Now, if you know it ahead of time and that's what you want to do, my view is fine. Go for it. But you ought to know it ahead of time, and an awful lot of young people don't. They think that if they get a degree, they'll get a good job. So this book, Finding a Career for Life, gives you a whole lot of metrics on what different jobs pay. It even gives you the over 100 of them give you a job of or some metrics on what the people who are in those jobs think of the job. Do they like it? And as I say in the book, very often you may think you're going to like something, but until you try it, you don't know. My daughter did not think she liked raw fish, but now she loves sushi. And when she was 15, if I had told her to eat some raw fish, she'd have stuck her tongue out and say, "Pooey, no way." She likes it now because she tried it. The same thing is true of jobs. You'll find out if you like it after you tried it in most cases. So the book is, it will be on Amazon probably, by Friday. I will get the last author's proof tomorrow, and assuming there is nothing really bad wrong with it, I will say go for it, and it'll be up on Amazon by Friday. And, of course, I have them at my website, theroadtothetop.com. And the same is true of the other book that I wrote, Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Business Principles.
You know, Professor, I commend you on writing this book because there are so many people, especially young people, that just have no clue as to which way they want to go in life. You kind of, you know, after high school, you're kind of at a crossroads if you're not really sure whether or not you want to go to college or not, you know, whether you want to go into the military, you know. And then this book that you've written, it just speaks to one of your other principles, which is decisions should be data-driven. You know,
yep.
And so you lay out all the data, you know, and so for somebody who isn't quite sure what they want to do at with their life, especially at that very, very tender age of, you know, just coming out of high school, while they're still in high school, trying to decide what they want to do with the rest of their life, then that book is going to be of great benefit. So I commend you on the book.
It is, Jaronza, it is one of the most important decisions that any of us are going to make. If you get it right, it means that your next 40 or more years are going to be happy and prosperous years. And if you get it wrong, you're going to wish you hadn't. And all too often, people get it wrong, not because they didn't have the facility to get it right, but because they were told certain things about what they were doing, and what they were told was not true. And there's an awful lot of information in this book. It is set out for high schoolers to read. I've had a bunch of them read it, and it takes maybe, to get the basic data, probably 30 minutes to read through it. To read the whole book, it's only 85 pages, including the 10 Roman numeral pages at the front of it. Now, there is a section in it for becoming an entrepreneur, and the reason I put that in there is because in the last 15 years, 99% of all new jobs have been for entrepreneurs, for the IRS calls them proprietors, but essentially it's entrepreneurs, and 99%, that's where it's come from. So, you know, if that's something, you ought to know something about it, and I have that in it. I have the 6 principles for making a decision, and then 11 principles for just running a happy life.
Well, everybody, I definitely want to recommend that you get the book, especially if you've got children or grandchildren. You can actually read it with them, read it, have them read it, and, you know, get their thoughts on it, because, again, as Professor said, these are very, very important decisions and can actually set you down a path to a road of happiness, or like he said, if you get it wrong and you get into the wrong field, just a work life of misery. There are so many people that are going to jobs that they absolutely hate. They hate the job, they hate the supervisor. I mean, you know, so they're very, very important work, and so I encourage everybody to make sure you get it, and we'll tell you again at the end of the show how you can get this book, because it can actually change a life just by reading it and getting it right, you know. So
let me add one last thing to it, Jaronza, and that is that this is a decision that that truly will affect your entire life. And you really ought to give it some thought And all together too often, there is no thought put into it. People just go do stuff. And it's so, so sad. I meet adults my own age, or, well, say from 40 years on up, and almost every darn one of them has a story of a family member, a young family member, who went to college and ended up with something that, and they can't find the job. And they tell me what it is, and I just say, oh, God. You know, I could have told them before they ever went to college what the result would be, because mm-hmm. it is so well known if you only know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we should get on to
we'll tell them how they can get the book, and we can do a show on the book. I mean, because again, it's such an important work that can help so many young people today. And again, I commend you for it, and I want to make sure that we give everybody the information on how they can get it. Okay, but again, this interview is very, very powerful, because we're going through the book, 102 Business Principles, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles by Professor Geiger. And in the book, he outlines 102 principles gained from over 50 years' experience as an entrepreneur. And if you're serious about business, if you're really serious about becoming an entrepreneur, know this: it's going to take more than 10 principles. You know, you read books on, you know, how to become an entrepreneur, and they give you 5 or 10 principles. It's going to take a lot more than that. You're going to need a compass. You're going to need a guide. You're going to need the voice of experience that you can refer to, and you can do so in the pages of this book. And we're going down the book, the principles, one by one. And the next principle that we're going to discuss is principle number 44, which is let the other guy write the agreement. Professor?
Yeah, this is something that I think if you would read 10 books on entrepreneurship or business or writing agreements or all of that, all 10 of them will tell you just the opposite. They'll all say you should write the agreement and not the other guy, and they'll give you a whole list of reasons why. Well, let me give you the two most important reasons why you ought not to. Let the other guy do it. That's what you ought to do. One, it costs way more to have your attorney write the agreement than it costs to have your attorney review the agreement. It's just going to cost 2 or 3 times as much. That's number one. In both cases, your attorney is going to go over it with a fine-tooth comb. The second and even more important reason is if the other guy writes the agreement, you'll find out something about him that is hard to find out. What kind of person is he? Is the other person one of those who says, I want to have a really fair agreement, because if both of us are happy, we're both going to work at the agreement to make it better over time, and we're both going to make money and everybody will be happy? Or is the other person the kind who will say, I'm going to drop in 1 or 2 gotchas in it, and I'm going to do it in such a way that you won't see them, and when you sign this thing, I got you. And the only way you can find that out is if they write it. They certainly aren't going to tell you that, but if they write it, it'll be there. So what you do is you then, when you get the agreement, you go through it very carefully, and you give a copy to your attorney and tell him, go through it carefully and see if you can find any gotchas in it. If you do, then what I have always done is I have the attorney red light him out and fix it and then give it back to him. But I don't get let my attorney give it back to him. I want to give it back to him, and here's the reason. Because I give it back to him, and I play as dumb as a box of rocks. And I say, Mr. Smith, I don't know why this silly damn attorney of mine redlined this out. It seemed okay to me, but he did, and, you know, that's what I'm paying him for, so I'm going to have to kind of stick by it, and here you are.
Right.
And if the guy is basically a crook, what will happen is that same thought will raise its ugly head elsewhere in the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
He'll take it out of where it was redlined out, but he'll put it back in some other place, and he'll try to hide it. So the second time you go through it, you really go through it word by word by word to find, see if it's there. And if it does, if it's there, well, then I have one other principle. And that is, some deals are best left unmade, and this, by God, is one of them.
Good point. While we're on this, I think it's important to impress upon people the need, you mentioned attorneys, even to have an attorney. There are a lot of people that might go into business just, you know, willy-nilly, just go into business, I'm going to start a business, and, you know, not even think about an attorney until they need one, you know. By that time, it's too late. Talk about just even the need to have an attorney to do just what you said, just to even review contracts and the like.
Well, there's a lot of attorneys out there. What you need to start with is a business attorney, and more importantly is a small business attorney, somebody who specializes in small business. And you don't necessarily need them to write an agreement or your original LLC or C-Corp or S-Corp, because that you can get done very inexpensively commercially. And there's no way that a good attorney, if you get a good attorney to do that, it's going to cost you $3,000 to $5,000 or more. And you can get the same thing for $100 or $200. So you don't need an attorney for that. But you need an attorney as soon as you start signing agreements with people. You need an attorney. That goes for renting property. If you're going to rent an office, you need to run that agreement by an attorney. I can assure you that the person renting the office has run it by an attorney, and there may be some really big gotchas in there.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you do that. And you can find an attorney. You want to find an attorney who has a small practice, one, two, three, four person practice, a small practice. Don't go to one of the big guys. You don't need the big guy now. Maybe someday you will, and then you can get the big guy then. But go to a small attorney that you can actually sit down and talk to. Remember that when you start talking to them, the clock starts running and they start charging you. Nowadays, in a city, say, the size of Richmond, Virginia, Greater Richmond's about 1 million people, and Richmond proper is probably 250,000, 300, something like that. That size city, you can anticipate $250 an hour or more. So if you're going to take something to an attorney, have it organized. You don't want him to he or her to spend $250 for the first hour trying to organize what you could have. So you organize,
right.
You make sure you know what you want them for, and then you go for that. But you're going to need an attorney, and like I say, one of the first things you'll be doing is renting space in all likelihood, and you better have an attorney to help you do that.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the fabulous book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. We're going down the book of principles one by one. If you're listening online and you have a question, the call-in number is 347-324-5727. If you're listening by phone and you have a question, all you have to do is press 1. That will alert me that you have a question, and I can bring you on, and you can ask your question or make your comment. This is serious business. You really need to pay attention, okay, because just not knowing can have you in a big world of trouble. And just by getting this book, and actually save you so much. It can save you trouble, and it can make you money, okay? So we're going to tell you how you can get this book, okay? But on to the next principle. We're on principle number 45, which is some deals are best left unmade. Professor?
Yeah, that's the one I just talked about. If you find somebody who's a little shifty, You don't make a deal with them, because if they're a little shifty in the original deal, they're going to be shifty everywhere, and you're going to end up wishing you hadn't. There's plenty of folks out there who will you can do business with. Just stay away from the shifty, the crooks, the ones who are always looking for an angle where they can put you in a box. And when I meet one of those people, I say thank you very much. It's a very interesting proposition, but it's not an interesting proposition for me. Goodbye. And that's the end of that. Just
you know,
very abrupt.
Could you? Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
You gave an example in your book about a gentleman we'll call him Jerry, the guy who came to, rent a hangar for his airplane.
Yeah.
Could you tell a little experience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he came in to rent a hangar, and he had a pretty fancy single-engine airplane. And the hangar they'd go into is about a 40 by 40 hangar. And I think at that time, the hangar costs around $500 a month at the airport in California. It's pretty expensive, but in that airport, I mean, that was a going rate. And I didn't have one, so he said, well, I'll rent a jet hangar. And a jet hangar, they started at around $1,500, and he said, yeah, that'd be fine. And I thought, oh, that's odd. I mean, I've known a lot of wealthy people, but I don't know of any who want to throw away money like that. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I excused myself and told him to go ahead and sign it if he decided that's what he wanted, the other one, and I would be back, but I had a meeting to go to, which I did not. The meeting I went to was to go get a cup of coffee at a restaurant not very far away. And when he left, I returned, and sure enough, it was all signed up on the secretary's desk. And she said, boy, he really pressed me to sign this, but I told him there's no way. I mean, I'm not an officer. It wouldn't do him any good if I had. So the airplane business in the L.A. Basin is a pretty closed deal. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of us who were in it. And he had mentioned that he'd come from his airplane was currently housed at Hollywood Burbank Airport, and I was at Van Nuys about 10 miles away, and I knew everybody over there. So I called up the first one that came to mind and said, do you know Jerry? Oh, yeah, boy, I do know Jerry. You bet you that SOB had his airplane here. He didn't have his airplane here for 2 weeks before he sued us. And it wasn't cheap. And then from here, he moved across the field, and he didn't have one over there for 2 weeks before he sued them. So when Jerry came back, I said to him, well, Jerry, I've decided that I'm not going to rent you that jet airplane hangar. I want to keep it around. I mean, you're going to use 50 gallons of fuel a week or a month, and the jet's going to use 500 gallons. So I think I'll stay with keep it open for a jet. He said, well, I'm going to sue you. You can't do that. I said, well, suit yourself, but that's where it's going to be. You know, I know about your situation over at Hollywood Burbank, and I know why you're here is because they threw you out. And they threw you out of three different places all because you sued them. So you say you're going to sue me, you're going to sue me anyway, but right now you have no cause of action. Sure enough, he did sue. And when I gave it to my attorney, I told him the story, and he countersued, and the whole thing went away. But it was obvious that to me, when he started out the way he did, that good old Jerry was bad, bad trouble. So I put in place some deals are best left unmade, and I was ready for the consequences. Had I not done that, he would have found some cause of action to sue me if he had to manufacture it out of whole cloth, and it wouldn't have been, it would have been expensive.
You know, Professor, Just being in business for as long as you have, I'm sure you've seen the tricksters come and the tricksters go. And when encountering that, you know, sometimes people feel like, well, you know, I'll just protect myself. You know, they might be tricky, you know, but, you know, hey, I'll just protect myself. But ultimately, you don't even want to deal with that energy. You know,
why do you feel
like you got to, I mean, like you said in the book, deals used to be made on a handshake basis, okay? But now you've got attorneys and contracts and so forth. So it's just best if you peek that somebody's tricky, let them do their trick somewhere else. Professor, let's move on to the last one we can get in for the day. And I like this one. I'm going to come back to 46, but get it in writing when everyone is happy. When you're in business, you're dealing with contracts, you're dealing with attorneys, you're dealing with agreements, and sometimes stuff gets fuzzy, memory gets fuzzy. It's best to get it in writing. Professor?
Absolutely, absolutely. And when you first do it, when you're in a meeting or you make notes, then get the other guy to write the contract, you always want to do that. I mean, there was a time I grew up on a Kansas farm, and hell, all of Kansas farmers, we never had contracts for anything. And we all, you know, we just did what we said we were going to do. And there wasn't any question about it. You said you were going to do something, you did it. And if it ended up costing you $1,000, you did it anyway because you said you were going to do it. So you want to make sure that you can get it in writing. Make sure that it is a good contract. It's good for both parties, that both parties will help to try to make it work in over time. But you want to get it in writing because stuff happens. And, people get married, they get divorced, stuff happens. And if you have it in writing, it takes a lot of the sweat out of it. And who needs it? You know, I don't want lawsuits. And we are a very, very litigious society. And people tell me about how they have a non-written agreement. Well, today, if you have a non-written agreement, what that tells you is you don't have an agreement at all.
Hello.
And it ends up with a he said, she said, and there's just no cause for that. There's enough headaches in this world in business without that. So get it right.
Now, what about
you start a business and your very, very best friend is going to be your partner? First of all, I'd say don't do that. Friends is partners are a bad deal. So don't do that. But if you whoever you start out with, if you think you're good friends with them, fine, get it in writing. When everybody is happy, that's the most likely way to keep everybody happy.
You know what, Professor? I think sometimes there are people who in business are actually afraid to ask for something in writing just simply because they may feel intimidated, or they may feel like, well, I don't want to offend the other person by asking them in writing. Does my asking for something in writing imply that I don't trust them, or that I'm not taking them at their word? And, you know, so please,
well,
if you could just...
actually, Juwanza, that's another very good reason to get them to write the agreement. So you ask them to write the agreement, and so what you're saying is I trust you to write the agreement, and but still wanted the writing, and so that's just another good reason to do that. But you definitely want it in writing. And if it's the type of person who takes offense to that, here again, I would say some deals are best left unmade, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, my special guest today is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the awesome book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. We're going to tell you how you can get this book. There are 102 business principles in it, born from over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. when you are an entrepreneur and you're out there, there are going to be some things that pop up that you had no clue. Where did this come from? Or, much less, how to deal with it. So with a book like this, you actually have basic principles that you can actually go read, where a professor gives examples of the principles that you can actually apply, not just in business, but in life. I've actually used this when making certain decisions. For example, one of your principles is, what's the downside? I use that all the time when making a decision. Very important decision you have to make. Ask yourself, what's the downside? If there's no downside, hey, go for it, but you at least have to ask certain questions. But Professor gives business examples that you can also apply to life. So, Professor, some people who are out there that are listening and they say, you know what, I got to get this book. How can they get entrepreneurial success, The Road to the
Well, you can get it online at theroadtothetop.com, theroadtothetop.com. And you can get it there. You'll also be able to get the new book here shortly. There you can, if you're starting a business and you want a really first-rate cash flow forecast template, you can get one of those there. It's $15 for the template. The book is less than $18 plus shipping it. So that's easy to get. And that's where you get it, or you can get the book at Amazon. The only difference is when I sell books, I sign them. So you get a signed copy. May not be a big deal for you, but at any rate, there you go. And you can get it either way. Love to have your business. I think you'll find it's a great book. And the principles are for all kinds of little things. It's not one of these things that are all ivory tower theoretical things, or there's something that's designed for great big corporate businesses. That's not what this is. These are for a small business. So, for example, if you wanted to do a roadside sign, how do you do a roadside sign that will be read? It's simple. Principle is that you can't have more than 7 words. If you keep it at or under 7 words, it'll be read. If it's much over 7 words, it won't be read. Next time you drive down the highway, put that to the test. You'll find out I'm telling you the truth. And there's all kinds of small things, 102 of them. And you'll find an answer for many, many, many of small businesses' problems. And there's something that the principle that I give are actionable type principles. You can actually do them.
You know, everybody, remember this. The more you know, the less you don't know. So get the book, okay? You're only going to add to your knowledge by reading this book. There may be some things that you know. There are going to be a lot of things that you don't know and that are going to be able to benefit you. If you have a young person, especially somebody just, or maybe just young in business, there are a lot of people that have great ideas for business, and a lot of these businesses fail within the first year just simply because they didn't go about it the right way. There are just certain basic principles that have to be adhered to if you're going to be successful. My guest today, Professor Geiger, has over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. Professor, can you just share some of the different ventures that you've been involved in as an entrepreneur? We talked about selling planes, flying planes, some of the ventures that you've done.
Well, I've sold planes. I started out as a single proprietor with one and just me, and ended up with 4 stores up and down the West Coast and over 100 people. I built yachts. I've sold yachts. I made furniture, just all kinds of stuff. Now selling books, and you keep calling me professor, but to tell you the truth, that's been 8 or 9 years of my life, and for 50-plus years I was building companies. So all kinds of things, some service companies, some manufacturer, all kinds of stuff. And so the principles don't come from one success. It's one of the problems with a lot of these books. Somebody has had a single success in a single business, and they think they know all there is to know. And I keep saying that. I said, now that I've started 11 businesses, I think I know most of what there is to know, but I'm to the point where I understand that the next one will teach me a new lesson. It's just that there's 102 of them here that you won't have to learn the hard way, the way I learned them. And I'm sure they'll help you.
Well, I want to say thank you. Thank you again for being my guest today. To all of the listeners, if you're serious about being an entrepreneur, and it's not just a thought today, and then tomorrow you want to be something else, but if you're serious about being an entrepreneur, then this book needs to be in your possession, not on your shelf, but in your lap as you read, okay? And I guarantee you that if you read this book, you're going to refer it. You're going to get another copy for somebody else that you know that's in business, whether they're just starting or whether they've been in business for a while, because this book can actually make the difference between you succeeding in business or failing in business, okay? So increase your odds. Stack the deck in your favor. Get this book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. And again, you can get it at theroadtothetop.com. Okay? So, Professor, again, I can't wait for the next show. Thank you, as always. You make a very compelling case why people should really actually understand business before going into it, and you also made a very compelling case as to why people need this book. Thank you for being my guest again today.
Thank you, Juanzo.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Everybody,
bye-bye.
My special guest is, good night, Professor Joseph Geiger, author of the awesome book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. Before we go, I just want to make an announcement. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, well, on July the 16th, there's going to be a raw food festival. When? Saturday, July the 16th. Where? It's going to be at the Emergence Arts Community Collective. That's at 733 Euclid Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. That's going to be from 3 to 8 p.m. And the cost for that is $20. And that ticket includes food plates from several raw food vendors. So in case you've never experienced, vegan food, raw food, you need to get out there. Hopefully it's going to be a sunny day. Again, that's going to be Saturday, July the 16th. It's the Raw Food Festival. Where is that going to be? It's going to be at the Emergence Community Arts Collective at 733 Euclid Street, Northwest. That's going to be from 3 to 8 p.m. For more information, the telephone number there is 202-462-2285. Again, for more information, that's 202-462-2285. While you're out there, you might see Dr. Ruby Lathan. She's going to be a part of this festival, so you definitely don't want to miss that, okay? So until the next time, thank you so much for tuning in. I certainly appreciate it. For all of you entrepreneurs out there, make sure you get the book, and you'll be glad you did. Take care. That's it.